This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It is Thursday, January 30th, 2020. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 34 degrees in Chicago under cloudy skies. We're going up to a high of 36 degrees today. And right now, the Fed holds steady on interest rates while the tally of the fourth quarter gross domestic product is out. We are joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver. And thanks for joining us, David. The economy slowed, but it's still growing. So what helped to do so in Q4?
Well, that fourth quarter came in right on estimate levels, exactly where I thought it would be, 2.1%. We do have to recognize that 2019 saw the effects, the stimulative effects of the tax cuts beginning to wear off, and also that important business fixed investment number was hurt by the trade war with China. Business is highly uncertain about the outlook. So we did see some of the bloom off the rose in 2019. Remember, in 2018, we were close to 3% growth. I don't want to give all bad news today, but I think that coronavirus plus the shutdown in Boeing production of the 737 MAX is going to give us a big hit in the first quarter of 2020, we may be down around 1% or slightly more in growth because of those hits. The one thing I'd say about the coronavirus is that, as in most cases, the effect, while serious, probably will turn out to be more temporary than anything else. But we just don't know at this moment, and that's why the markets are nervous.
So looking ahead here, well, looking back at Q4, what was the government spending in Q4?
Generally, the real focus wasn't completely on that government. We had a great housing sector, and what cooled off significantly in that fourth quarter were the consumers. Consumer spending was up only 1.8%. That's well below previous quarters. Our Fed chairman said that the consumer looks pretty good in terms of jobs, in terms of wages, in terms of balance sheet and debt. So I would guess that consumer spending will pick up, but that was perhaps the big story in the fourth quarter.
You talk about coronavirus and the troubles at Boeing potentially weighing down the economy in the first quarter of 2020. Both of those seem like rather temporary situations. Coronavirus will eventually subside. Boeing will get back on a solid footing. Does that mean there could be potentially pent-up demand being unleashed later in the year, or will the doldrums continue?
You could not have read my thoughts better. Exactly what I expect to pick up later in the year. So we might come in for the whole year 2020 fairly close to the 2.3% growth rate this year, or maybe even higher. Remember, we had some big trade agreements finally signed, and they might give a boost later on in 2020 to the economy. So while we might be starting the first quarter at not much more than 1%, we could be ending the fourth quarter of 2020 at close to 3%. That would be a decent year.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. David Jones, Chairman, DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado.
And we have now Rick Cobb joining us on the line. We're going to talk about jobs and also the coronavirus. And Rick, could the coronavirus be a boon to the U.S. economy in some way?
It's a good question. Perhaps in the short term or perhaps as a political football. And what I mean by that is that the difference in the labor costs for the world, in Asia and South America, the hourly wage rate is anywhere from $24 to $2.25. So that's a pretty low rate and a big range too, kind of going from Asia all the way over to South America. You look at North America and the EU, Europe, and that goes to to a range of $63 to $31 an hour. So you'd have to offset a lot of costs to move that business back to the U.S. And as much as people probably don't want me to say this, one of the easiest moves would probably be Mexico.
So could you, I don't know if this is in your wheelhouse, but I just want to check, could U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports be lifted if the virus weighs on China's economy? Because President Trump said he has offered help, and that maybe could affect us here in the U.S. too, as maybe on the job front.
I think the bigger risk, that certainly is you know, again, we look at politics versus the well-being of people, the nation. You know, the viruses don't recognize borders. You can't check them. And we are certainly far more international as a planet than we've ever been. So the idea that that virus is not going to end up in the U.S., I think, is not practical. Now, what probably makes more sense is to negotiate certain behaviors and expectations and checks and balances that keep chartered planes from flying into U.S. airspace, that do checks at 40% of the electronics manufactured and brought into the U.S. are made in Asia. 25% of all meat produced in the world now is coming from somewhere in Asia. Putting restrictions on how those people and those products are brought in is more important than just a simple tariff.
Just want to mention, this is Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger, Gray & Christmas. And Rob?
And Rick, from a larger HR perspective, you talked about how there are a lot of, multinational corporations that not only have a presence in the U.S., but also in the EU, and in Asia. And it sounds like smart policy for any Fortune 500 company, one that does have a footprint all over the world, to have a type of epidemic or pandemic policy in place when these situations, like the coronavirus or SARS or even just an influenza outbreak, when that pops up, the companies have an action plan that is executed.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're operating at 3% unemployment or lower in some specific functions, you can't afford to lose people. So there's two things. One of them is to have, and companies are often very good at this, a pandemic policy about travel restrictions and processes for evaluating people's whether they are ill and at what level. The other part that we've been talking about, and you and I have talked about this in the past, which is remote work. This is the perfect time for companies to embrace something that they've been reluctant to get to. One of the best ways to keep something from spreading is to isolate it. If you have people that are capable of working remotely and it's not going to hurt your productivity, why would you possibly want to bring them into a center where they could spread that disease? And you can run this experiment sort of forced by nature and maybe find out some really interesting things about your company and how it can work more effectively.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon for the insights. Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger, Gray & Christmas, based in Chicago.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The time has finally arrived for Britain's exit from the European Union while the impact of the coronavirus is spreading throughout the global economy. Let's get the latest now from Andrew Bush, economist and author of the book World Event Trading, based here in Chicago. Andy, welcome back to the program. Your take or anyone's take on Brexit and its departure from the European Union seems to line up with it's a Rorschach test for how people feel about international alliances in general. And if you weren't a fan of the European Union, you're a fan of Britain taking off. But if you're also a believer in free trade and these types of alliances, you look at this with pause. So kind of what's your view on Brexit as Britain formally leaves the European Union?
Well, the easy part is leaving. The difficult part is maintaining a trading relationship with the group you're leaving. So that's the rubber meeting the road for the UK and the EU. They need to come up with some sort of trade agreement. And remember, by leaving the EU, you lose all of those agreements, all of those regulations that everybody saw eye to eye on and possibly cause problems for the economy in the UK. But that's what you have to renegotiate. So for the UK, they've got to the end of the year to do this, but I think it's going to be very difficult. Even though they're going to leave tomorrow on the 31st, it's going to be very tricky. Just as an example, just the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland, I mean, that was the source of so much political strife and loss of life. And they came up with an agreement. Now, would that you'd have to go back to the pre-agreement situation? I don't know. This is something that Speaker Pelosi brought up in when she was discussing any kind of a free trade deal with the United States and the UK, just as an example of the complexity of what we're talking about.
Now, what's the situation going to be until those issues are hammered out?
Well, it's status quo until then, but there's a lot of uncertainty that's growing. You're already having businesses that are leaving the UK, going to the EU or to the mainland, the continent in Europe, because they can get the certitude of doing business there and be covered under those things and not have to worry about the disruption to trade. I mean, and that covers a wide range of things, you know, flowers going from France into the UK and for, you know, swaps and interest rate products in London, as an example. So there's all sorts of crazy things that are going to have to get done to get a relationship going. And just remember, whatever the EU does with the UK, the EU is probably going to try to do with the United States. So keep that in mind. There's bigger stakes at play here.
That's Andrew Bush, economist and author of the book World Event Trading, based here in Chicago. Thanks for joining us. And still ahead in Technology Thursday, shares of Facebook take a dive after the release of its quarterly earnings report.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Facebook stock plunges at the open today over its quarterly report and concern about the advertising market. We'll take a closer look in Technology Thursday.
The China-centered coronavirus outbreak could cause problems for retailers in America.
The Humvee, targeted by environmentalists for being a gas guzzler way back when, is making a comeback as an electric vehicle.
The Chicago Police Department announces its biggest shakeup in years.
WBBM Business, the Dow is down 164 points right now. The NASDAQ is down 68. The S&P 500 is down 22.
AccuWeather says the rest of today mainly cloudy, a high 36. And tonight cloudy with a flurry or two late, a low near 30. It's 34 degrees at O'Hare, 32 at the lakefront.
The noon business hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. We'll take a closer look at the markets in moments. We want to bring up to date on two major developing stories at this hour. First, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed that the first person-to-person transmission of coronavirus in the U.S. and the patient is the spouse of a Chicago woman who's being treated for coronavirus right now. We're expecting state and local leaders to update reporters in a little more than 30 minutes. We'll bring you updates as we get them. Next, Chicago's interim police superintendent has just taken the wraps off a sweeping reorganization of the department. Less than 20 minutes ago, interim superintendent Charlie Beck told reporters that part of the change involves moving detectives out of central offices and under direction of district commanders.
This gives them the resources to directly affect a problem. But even more importantly, it puts all of those resources not only under the same roof, but under the same command. So it brings a unity of purpose to our ability to address crime.
The shift in resources also includes a new structure to ensure compliance with the consent decree designed to ensure reform in the department. WBBM political editor Craig Delamore is with the superintendent right now, and we'll hear from him live in the next hour.
Markets are losing ground today as earnings season rolls on, and we're joined by Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital. Jack, what's weighing on the markets today?
Yeah, it's. I think it's the coronavirus. It seems like the news appears to be getting worse, and it's just creating a lot of uncertainty. And I think add to that, as you mentioned, Facebook's disappointing earnings results is probably the 1-2 punch that the market is receiving today.
It's earnings season, and Microsoft is not only is the stock up, but there's also better than expected guidance. It looks like there are some good things on the horizon if they're saying this.
Yeah, there are. Microsoft certainly the bright spot in earnings season, up about 2% or so today in reaction to the news. A lot of it related to cloud computing. So this was an area where Amazon's been dominant. Microsoft has been able to nip at their heels and gain a little market share. Certainly, this issue with the Defense Department is likely going to be a contentious issue between the two companies. But for the time being, I think Microsoft appears to be delivering on a lot of fronts.
Coronavirus does capture the public imagination because the idea of a mysterious illness coming out of nowhere does conjure, you know, presses a lot of pop culture buttons in our collective imagination. It does call to mind some science fiction or horror books or movies. But the reality is coronavirus, the number of people sick and the number of people who have died, unfortunately, is a drop in the bucket compared to a typical flu season in the U.S. But you do have to do your due diligence. In previous outbreaks, whether it's SARS or Ebola in 2014, what is the immediate impact on supply chains and logistics, and how long does it take after the virus or the crisis has passed for things to get back to normal?
Yeah, great question, Rob. You're right. I mean, certainly beyond the just the personal tragedy related to the illness, it really is more of a economic conundrum in that the particular province and city is now isolated. Travel is restricted. That means supply chain and a lot of trade in general and commerce in China, the world's second largest economy, comes to a halt for a little while. So if you look at it in historical perspective, and I think SARS is probably the closest example, that essentially took about one percentage point of growth out of China's economic growth trajectory for one quarter, and it appeared roughly, three quarters later, the Chinese economy recovered. So I think for right now, as you adroitly point out, it's really from an investment perspective, it's really more of an economic puzzle to see, how much growth will, not only the virus, but essentially all of the precautions related to the virus, be taken out of the economic growth trajectory.
And I asked this question of an earlier guest on this hour, and that is, with coronavirus weighing down the global economy, along with the lingering uncertainty from trade deals, the percentage of growth that could potentially be lost, is that gone forever? Does that just dissipate into the ether? Or could that translate into pent-up demand being unleashed at some point in the future?
Yeah, it really depends on the product or service that you're that you're looking at. I think some portion of it is lost. In other words, if someone not buying a pizza for lunch today will likely not buy two pizzas for lunch tomorrow. So I do think that there will be some, lost economic growth that we just won't get back. But on the other hand, someone not getting a haircut today will likely get a haircut next week. So there, it's a mixed bag. Most products and services likely would be of the latter, or the pent-up variety, rather than lost forever.
Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital. Thank you for joining us. Up next in Technology Thursday, why shares of Facebook are taking a big hit today.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday this afternoon. The focus is on Facebook in the aftermath of its latest earnings report. We're joined by Ali Mograbi, Senior Equity Analyst, Morningstar, here in Chicago. And Ali, stock is down big time at Facebook due to some high costs. Is this just a one-time high cost hit, or could it stretch well into this year?
Hi, Jennifer. Yes, I think actually the costs could hit, could stretch well into the year. We're talking about basically legal costs associated with some antitrust pressure that these guys are getting from, of course, various states and a federal level, in addition to R&D. I mean, they're going to need to invest more in R&D to come up with innovative new products and or new services to hopefully at least try to partially offset the slowness in ad revenue growth.
Is there a chance that Facebook could be broken up in some way? I mean, they have Instagram, they have WhatsApp. Could we see that as a possibility here?
There is a possibility. As you know, all of this is, and it's mainly based on the fear that Facebook has attained its market dominance through things, possibly in violation of the antitrust laws, specifically the Clayton Act. I don't know if you know, but the Clayton Act basically talks about acquisitions if they are anti-competitive and or if basically they're monopolistic, they can be blocked. Now, if you look back and you see of some of the acquisitions that Facebook has made, such as Instagram and WhatsApp, some arguments can be made that these were anti-competitive acquisitions, and therefore the company needs to break up. You know, a case to look for or to compare it with would be what happened with AT&T, for example. So there is a chance of a breakup, but there are also some precedents, some other cases that work in favor of Facebook. But in terms of, you know, when such decision is going to be made, it will take a while. As you know, the FTC is actually investigating these guys. They just started in the middle of last year. So this could drag on for a while.
Now, the drop comes after Facebook reports a 51% rise in expenses compared to 2018, and they were largely related to the company's privacy and security improvements. Obviously, Facebook would like to keep the FTC at bay and make it sound like everything they are doing is strictly above board. But from a PR perspective, there seems to be a number of stories about Facebook tracking you for the purpose of targeted advertising. And does that seem to be having any impact on its user base, where people are actually walking away from Facebook because they just don't want to feel like they're being watched all the time?
Good question, Rob. Actually, it's as we've seen based on their user numbers, it looks like it has not impacted the users. It has not necessarily created that lack of trust in the users. As we saw in Q4 of last year, the amount of the number of their users, daily users and their monthly users, continued to grow. The monetization of those users, which means basically the advertisers being pleased that those users continue to stay on that platform and willing to pay for ads, that continues to grow. So to answer your question, no, we haven't yet seen a negative response from the users.
And then when it comes to the FTC investigation that you mentioned, could this any potential Facebook breakup or a way to uncouple itself from a couple of its associated businesses, could that be done entirely through the regulatory apparatus, or would that require legislation and the federal courts?
That actually, well, it depends, right? So it can be done through the regulatory apparatus, of course. You know, if, for example, and this is all an if, if the FTC is successful in terms of its investigations and the way it presents its case in front of the courts regarding what it views as anti-competitive acquisitions by Facebook. Of course, they will use, as I mentioned before, the Clayton Act to support their argument. And, of course, the courts are going to take into account the precedents that have been set. Some precedents work in favor of FTC, such as the AT&T breakup, and some don't. If you look back to 2018, there was actually a case of Ohio versus American Express, and the outcome was in favor of American Express, where, you know, basically it was a two-sided platform. And I don't want to get into too much detail, but to a certain extent, that actually could support arguments possibly brought forth by Facebook and or some of the other big techs such as Google. So it remains to be seen. Now, from a, I think your other part of the question was whether the Supreme Court, of course, at the federal level, could come in and play. That basically, as I mentioned, it really depends on how the courts decide on these cases, and also whether Facebook decides to continue to appeal. If it does continue to appeal, then of course it will reach the Supreme Court level, and that will probably take a while too. And we'll see, you know, how they decide on these cases.
That's Ali Mogherabi, senior equity analyst, Morningstar here in Chicago. Thanks for joining us, and join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, how a virus from China could impact stores in the U.S.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There could be a disruption in the flow of products into the U.S. because of the spread of the coronavirus. Let's find out more from Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, welcome back to the program. Let's just talk about the supply chain as a whole. A product that you see in the store, when was it manufactured and when was it shipped from China to the U.S.?
Well, that depends a lot on what kind of product it is and how fast the fashion is. So most of what comes out of the part of China that's currently being affected, the Wuhan area, is electronics and heavier industry. So that stuff we're not so concerned about because it seems to be the production still going okay at the moment, and there are some workarounds for that. Other parts of China where we do produce a lot of consumer goods like shirts, sweaters, everything you buy in a Walmart or a Target or places like that, that would be more of a problem as other cities begin to have less people going to work and start shutting down on supply. That would start showing up certainly by back to school and probably sometime in the summer. Remember, we get a lot of product in between now and June. We don't get a lot of product in July. We had a lot of product in right at back to school, August into the September. So the biggest shortages would probably start to show up more in the back to school time frame if we started slowing production now. But could it show up sooner? Sure, because you know there are some things that are 12 or 13 weeks supply and 3 weeks in transit, and then they're here. So we would start to see spot shortages. But if you're talking about general shortages, it would probably be that long. But of course, the hottest items are what sell out, and the hottest items are what people want. And then suddenly you have less interest in the store if the hottest items aren't there. So I am worried about that. I am more worried, however, about if we would start to see the coronavirus spread in the U.S. We've got 5 cases or so here now. We've just seen our first human-to-human transference today in the States. So now we've got 6. If we started to see people not go to the mall, not go to the movie theater, not go out to the restaurant because they were concerned about coronavirus, if we started seeing shortages in buying masks and antivirals and things like that, we would know the consumer was really getting freaked out about the situation, where now they're just showing some concern. And then we could see some real impact on retail, because if people aren't going out, the only other way to buy it is to buy it online. And we're pretty much maxed out on buying online at the moment as far as being able to transfer all the product to the customer.
But are there advantages to people staying home? I mean, what about streaming services? Could they see a boost because of that?
Oh, absolutely. You would see things like streaming services rise a lot, one would think, because people will need something to do. And you would see online buying increase dramatically. And it would probably be a really big deal for online grocery buying, because that's when you have to go out the most and you have to go into a fairly dense population in most grocery stores. And that's also true if you go to Walmart, where 20% of the groceries are sold. So yes, you would see a big shift in the way people bought things, but it would really kill the restaurants and the movie theaters and places you don't even have to go. And you only go because it's fun, and it's not fun if you're scared.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO, J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide. If you missed any part of today's show, go to the stream and rewind at the time you want. We have Pause and Rewind that works both online and on the radio.com app.